You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you think it all, yeah.
I've never meant cares about you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. Say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done. Unless you were in the Midwest or in that tornado alley from Texas all the way into the Midwest. Wow, what a pounding they are taking. And it's going to continue. So I pray for the people who are in harm's way. And I pray that they seek the kind of shelter and refuge that they need for them and their families. That's really deep. That's really tough. This is Monday, and May 20th, the day after El Hajj Malik El Shabazz's birthday. And so we're going to honor him today. We're going to honor El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. Let me talk about the other programming here on Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, my program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives, which are go online to timeforanawakening.com. Once you get to the page, look for other programs. Click on that. And then at the very top is African Perspectives. Click on that, and it'll lead you to the Red, Black, and Green Lion. And look for programs that are dated and titled. And I want to thank my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku, for his assistance. Can't do without him. Other programming here. Right after this program, every Monday and Wednesday, is The Black People Matrix. The Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones. Mondays, every Monday and Wednesday. Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9 on Mondays. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 p.m. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that is Time for Awakening. Time for an Awakening is hosted by Brother Elliot and Brother Richard from 8 p.m. on Fridays. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Saturdays. And then on Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it ain't me. It's Sister POC. Once again with her program, Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And you can join the conversation.
of the promotions, We Buy Black. I talked with the brother from We Buy Black, and hopefully I'll get him on the program, because yesterday and Saturday, of course, was Malcolm X celebration in the West End, Malcolm X Park is what they should call it, and that's what we do call it, but it's the West End Park there in Atlanta, and they had a booth there, We Buy Black. Get everything you need from Black-owned businesses, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. They also have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. So if you're in the Atlanta area, stop in the Greenbrier Mall and check them out. Brother Bomani Tahimba is leaving this Wednesday, May 22nd, and he will be returning June 4th. That's right. He's going to Ghana. He's taking a group of brothers and sisters to Ghana. And it is leaving this Wednesday to June 4th. If you want to check out previous photos from previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to check out videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. But also, too, if you want to check out, go to his website, because there are other tours upcoming this year to South Africa, November 22nd to December 2nd, going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And, of course, in the end of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going back to Ghana. So AfricaForTheAfricans.org, or you can give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans. The Shrine of the Black Madonna has books. It has furniture. It has all the things that you're looking for, clothing, the red, black, and green shoes, artwork, you name it. It also has an African Holocaust Museum. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, and on Sunday from 1 to 3. They have a class on Saturday, Black History class, African History class, Know Thyself, open every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30. But if you can't make it and you want that information, you can contact the Shrine, because they have a multimedia library. That's right, that you can get. It is over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books, brothers and sisters. It is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment, all in your possession. Contact the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And the number to call is 404-444-6696, 404-444-6696. And that is the number to Brother Olatunji. The number to the Shrine is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Other bookstores, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which is really next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. And the Medu Bookstore has books for you, and you go there. If you don't, they don't have them, believe me, they'll get them. Another bookstore promoting is the Black Dot, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. This Friday, the 24th at 7 p.m., I'll be doing a presentation, Our Historical Journey to Greatness, an African Perspective, at 7 p.m. So if you're in the area, please stop through, or if you can't, just make it there. And, of course, the address to the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore is 6984 Main Street, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. And the number to call Brother Gazimde Ajamu, 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. He has the red, black, and green shoes. You want to come there during the presentation and buy some, and buy some books and buy some clothing that he has, please do so. That is this Friday. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Brothers and sisters, they have a Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. Thursday night broadcast for Us Lifting Us, Ulu, 9 p.m. 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789 for the ULU broadcast. Us lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Well, we pulled our monies together and we created Cafe ULU. Cafe ULU is located 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta, right off of Georgia Highway 166 and I-7585. Very easy to get to. It's open Tuesday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we have coffee. We have African coffee, Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, where coffee was started. We also have other African coffees. Okay. And we also have loose teas. Everything, brothers and sisters, everything at Cafe ULU is produced by us. Everything. With the potato chips, Symphony potato chips by our brother and his two daughters. Two dough girls with outstanding cakes and cookies and desserts. We have the Supreme Bean Pie, brothers and sisters from Chicago. That's right. The Supreme Bean Pie. And it is. We have all kinds of wraps and so forth. We're expanding our menu. Brothers and sisters, we want Cafe ULU to be your cafe, but we also want us to join ULU so we can create Cafe ULUs in your town, in your city, in your neighborhood, because it'll provide jobs for our children and provide goods and services for our people. That's what ULU is all about. Another offering we have at Cafe ULU is Ambrosia, which is a vitality drink by our good brother, Brother Novak Young. Ambrosia, it is made with alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, and chlorophyll. It also has hibiscus. It has ginger in it, as I said, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, spirulina. Oh, man, you can't beat this delicious drink. You got to have it. That's right, Ambrosia. Baba Baruti and Ya Baruti with the Akabin Institute. Brothers and sisters, I'm asking you to donate. Give them a donation to help their further their educating of the children or the future wars that we desperately need. Akabin Institute. You can write that check out to money order Akabin Institute. P.O. Box 10786. 10786 Atlanta, Georgia. 30310. Or if you'd like to do PayPal or Cash App, you can do so. $YAMBARUTI Baruti. Or PayPal.me/Akabin Village. The complimentary conference that Yah and Baba Baruti are putting on is May 31st to June 1st. May 31st is a meet and greet, and it's going to be held at the Sweet Spot, 675 Metropolitan Parkway. 675 Metropolitan Parkway, which is just east of the West End. Just east of the West End. And the meet and greet is from 8 to 11 on Friday. And then on Saturday is the conference, Let's Stay Together, from 2 to 6. The complimentary Celebrate African Love. We need each other, brothers and sisters. You know that. Juneteenth Day is coming up. June 14th through the 16th here. I know Juneteenth Day is June 19th, but here they celebrated the weekend. They have a full 3 days of celebration of the Juneteenth Day. So we're going to get Brother Johnson in here and talk a little more about it and what our plans also too for Juneteenth Day. Juneteenth. The Inye Sesem. The Inye Sesem is African Daily Revolutionary Thoughts. And we're going to read yesterday's, because yesterday was May 19th. May 19th. If you knew him, you would know why we must honor him. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. This was his meaning to his people. Ozzie Davis. We speak in honor of those African warrior scholars who have constantly proven their worth. We speak in honor of those at whose feet we humbly sit and study so that we can learn how to be warriors, warriors for our people. We speak in honor of those Jegnas. Remember, use the word Jegna instead of mentor. Mentor is the individual that Homer in the Iliad, Odyssey, or Odysseus, or what's the other one? They say he is, gave to, as he went on his journey, he gave his son to mentor. And mentor sexually abused him. So we don't want to use the word mentor. In fact, I maintain we should always look at the wordings that we use. If we say there's power in words, and I'm going to deal with that on another program, but we should use the words that we choose. That's why you hear me on this program. I don't use black because we ain't black. We African. I don't use white because they ain't white. They Europeans. They Caucasians. I don't use the word slave because we weren't slaves. We were captives. I don't use the word race because there is no race. There's only one so-called human race, and we as Africans are the fathers and mothers of. I use culture because it is culture, not race. So anyway, let's get back. We're speaking out of those Jignas who knew no way other than that of our ancestors, who have done and continue to do all and more in their power to confront, battle, and destroy any who would take the knowledge of the third eye from our children. We speak in honor of those who unhesitatingly fight, and will forever do battle for us simply because we are their people. Our children are their children. Our spirit is one. We speak in honor of those who have unyearingly paved the way on the battlefield, who made a way when we could not see for our ignorance and near comatose submission, who stood alone when we were too afraid or ignorant to answer the war horn. This praise song is for those who, since consciousness, have not committed treason against their ancestors, who have consistently stayed on the revolutionary path of the deeply dedicated, uncompromising warrior scholar who honor our ancestors through what they say and do. Affirm, I speak in honor of our warrior ancestors. Affirm, I speak in honor of our warrior ancestors. May 20th. Perhaps to be sane in this society is the best evidence of insanity. Addison Gale. A major problem making the study of our heritage so difficult yet necessary is the widespread misinterpretation of the history and priorities of the people who have contained and molded us over the last 500 or so years in Western cultural wasteland. Any credible student of African people will look at the oppressor rather than the oppressed for the causes of the condition of the oppressed. We don't blame ourselves. We put the blame squarely where it belongs. We look at our condition, even though it is horrendous. We are killing ourselves. We are degrading ourselves. But we put the blame where it belongs. Any credible student of African history will look at the oppressor rather than the oppressed for the causes of the conditions of the oppressed. With that in mind, consider this. If European culture is insanity, then at the fundamental level that humans define and perceive reality, we as African people and people of color have a very serious problem. If a cultural minority becomes the power majority, and in this minority, through military, media, and religious might, force the majority cultures to adapt its culture as their own, then insanity becomes the norm. And it is redefined as sanity. Accepting another's reality as your reality makes their reality yours. The global majority is right, which makes Europeans wrong. How dare they stand in judgment of anyone? Unfortunately, as this is the case with European cultural imperialism, once the insane can convince the sane that insanity is sanity, then the same majority becomes insane and insanity becomes universal and it is seen as sanity. Those individuals or groups who dare hold onto their original sanity become universally depicted as truly insane, aggressively backwards. And those who are carriers of the original insanity become universally depicted as truly sane, progressively modern. Affirm, I measure my sanity against that which is African. Affirm, I measure my sanity to that which is African. You know, I use that word. People use that word all the time, power. You know, power. Power is the ability. You know, and you know, people always talk about, well, power is this or power is that. No. Power is not money. Power is not information or education. Power is not political process. Power is none of that. What power is Dr. Wade Noble's definition, which I think is the most definitive. Power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Repeat. Power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Europeans define the reality, and we have accepted their definition as if it's our own. And the question we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in their reality? Who are we? First, in Europeans' reality, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, justifying our enslavement, justifying our captivity. And then once that was over, now we become lazy, no fit fathers, gangsters and thugs and no fit mothers, telling ourselves in their reality because we've accepted as if it's our own. We need to find reality for ourselves. And that's what needs to happen. Well, that's another program. Yesterday and Saturday, it was Malcolm X celebration in the West End at Malcolm X Park. The celebration was put on by the Malcolm X grassroots movement, the MXGM, and they did an outstanding job again. In fact, it reminded me of Chicago. African Festival of the Arts that they have at around Labor Day, with the amount of, you know, just right in the park, right on the walkway, everything's right there for you. You're just walking through and you're looking at all the vendors and all the booths, information and so forth. Just a beautiful day, a beautiful day. The last 2 days here in Atlanta, from a weather standpoint, but more importantly, from a cultural standpoint. And the feeling that we had. So the Malcolm X grassroots movement and the New African Scouts and all the other things that the Malcolm X grassroots movement is doing, and of course their core principles of human rights, reparation, self-determination, they oppose the genocide that is being practiced on people, political prisoners that we have, and those because of political wars, and of course even the issue of sexist or oppression, ending sexist oppression. So that's the grassroots movement. We appreciate that. But what I want to talk about, well, we have a call. I'm going to take a call. Good morning, 267. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie. How you doing, Brother Ralph?
Hey, Ralph, how you doing today, man?
I'm fine, Brother Oshie. And you're talking about one of my all-time favorite individuals, man. I mean, I look at that brother. If it was one thing about worshiping a human being, it would be him, and that's Malcolm. Brother Malcolm.
Well, you know what? You know what, Ralph? That's why me and you are such friends, man. And we're in tune because I feel the same way. In fact, I remember, you know, a lot of times you know, when somebody when is killed or incident happens, you know, like 9/11, people remember exactly where they were when they heard about it and so forth, or when Kennedy. Well, I remember when Malcolm was killed that Sunday when I heard about it. I was riding in a car with my mother and my auntie later that afternoon, close early evening, and on the radio said Malcolm X was killed in the Autobahn Ballroom. I remember distinctively. And the reason why is because of Muhammad Ali. You know, I love Muhammad Ali. And, of course, Muhammad Ali, after beating Sonny Liston, he joined the Nation of Islam. So I began to – in fact, I even – because the Nation of Islam's mosque, Mosque number 3, was not too far from my home, just about a mile and a half. In fact, I did see Muhammad Ali there at the Nation of Islam's Mosque number 3. I seen Muhammad Ali 3 times, man. So I'm a blessed brother. Yeah. But
yes,
no,
you are, because you experienced the Nation when it appeared to be something. But see, my experience with the Nation, brother, and this is in the this happened to me like in the late 80s.
Oh wow.
I was looking into the Nation of Islam, and what happened, I started hearing the way they, and you know, and Farrakhan was the leader, and they started talking about this brother. They called him Red. Mm. They called him Malcolm Little. They called him all sorts of traitor, this, that, the other. And, you know, I said, well, let me look up this brother to see who they're talking about. And I started listening to some of the tapes of Malcolm. I couldn't find nothing wrong with him. I found out that he came from a past, which a lot of us make a lot of silly mistakes in our 20s. You know, he had a past with him. But far as everything else, I saw nothing wrong with this brother. But I'm listening to the Nation talk about they wish they could dig him up and shoot him again. So I'm just talking about my experience, Hoshi, in the late 80s.
Yeah.
It wasn't until Spike Lee came out with that movie that they started changing their rhetoric.
Okay.
And that's when I said, like, this cult right here is not for me.
Mm.
And I removed myself from that cult. But I never, you know, so that was my experience with the Nation of Islam. You know what I mean? It was late 80s. I was in my late 20s, early 30s, trying to change my life, trying to get some identity. But, So when I started seeing that, and then when I went to see the movie Malcolm X that Spike Lee put out, I was even more in love with the brother that I never met. But that man has taught us on how to deal with our present-day situation, and Negroes still won't listen.
That's right.
He talked about in the ballot and the bullet. He talked about how the Republicans and the Democrats are wings of the same bird.
That's right.
He talked about how they get these times to represent us. And then he said, well, nah, I'm not going to call them times. I'm going to call them our uncles. So he talked about all this. Yet these Negroes still refuse to listen to that scholar.
That's right.
Man, look, when we could talk about that brother all day long. I have nothing but admiration for that man. I wish I would, you know, I wish I could have met him in person. You know, I despise the Nation of Islam because I've seen the rhetoric they use. Mm-hmm. To describe this brother,
mm-hmm.
And it was nothing but jealousy of their now current leader. And you can ask his daughter about that. She'll tell you the same thing.
Right.
So I heard the stuff they said. So, you know, but good. I mean, I just heard a speech by him for the first time yesterday. And I said, like, man, this brother, everything he said, I'm in tune with it. It's like, man, I love the brother. I love his transformation. I love how even though his religion was Islam, he said, let's put that in the closet.
That's right.
Because, you know, we gotta come together.
That's right.
And Islam was there for his spiritual mentality.
That's right.
And what he had to deal with, but he still knew the people that he wanted to help and represent, the lost and found black Negroes of America. He wanted to reach out and help us.
That's right.
And that's what my heart said, brothers. Sometimes people talk it. taking this criticism. Maybe I am a little harsh, but we are being misled by our people that are put there to mislead us.
And we got,
you know, all you got to do is listen to that man. He made it clear. So I just had to call you and say thank you for this program today. That's one of my honor. I love that brother.
Me too.
You know, I love him with all my heart.
Me too.
And I want to be like that brother.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He was a model.
He's an example for all black men.
That's right.
He's an example for all black men to follow. So,
that's right.
You know, like you said, you don't use black or white or nothing. So I apologize.
No, that's okay. You speak your truth because believe me, Ralph, I know you. I know you before I had a chance to meet you last year in November, because I feel your heart. I feel your compassion for our people, because me and you are in this together, my brothers. I appreciate you. In fact, I will always say I appreciate you because of how you led me to Time for an Awakening to come onto this forum and to be exposed to a wider audience. So once again, Brother Ralph, you're always on point.
All right, brother. So you have a good one, man. And
you
I'll
too.
Continue listening.
Right on, Ralph. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate you. Right on. Yeah, I'm definitely with Ralph because the impact that, and of course, we were all reading Malcolm X. You know, the autobiography of Malcolm X as told to Alex Haley. You know, and to me, Isaiah Davis was correct in his eulogy. He was our manhood. He was our shining black prince. He was a guide. He was a model. Now, I have some love for Dr. King, you know, and we understand Dr. King as a man. I know my cousin said Dr. King was a prophet. You know, I don't know about that, you know, but there's a love for Dr. King, you know, and in January, on his birthday, I talk about Dr. King like I'm talking about Malcolm today, but not with the reverence that I talk about Malcolm, because why? Number one, he wasn't trying to integrate us. He didn't believe by using moral persuasion that these Caucasians were. No, he understood what he was dealing with. He understood clearly what he was dealing with. He saw it in his life. In his life, in the imprisonment, in the gangsterism of the streets that he was dealing with, Malcolm grew up and he became a man of respect and nobility. He became somebody who wouldn't sell out. One of the best things that after he got out of the nation, when those FBI agents came to his door wanting him to sell out Elijah Muhammad, he had a tape recorder under the couch recording the proceedings. He said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to give you the list. I'm not going to do this, that, and the other. Because he was not a sellout. He was a man of serious respect, serious commitment to African people. And even though Spike Lee's movie had him looking all melancholy at the end, and you know, the reality of it is that he was a staunch Pan-Africanist to the very end. He was a staunch. Yes, he talked about that. You know, if you're for this, I'm willing to work with that. But he understood that those of us must come together. And it's not just Americans. Or Africans in America, but Africans in the diaspora and Africans on the continent. He understood that. Yes, I do understand that he was killed. There was a purpose by him being killed. There's a purpose by Dr. King being killed. And I wear that T-shirt with that picture of them both. I have that T-shirt with that picture of Malcolm and Martin together. It's the only time they ever physically met in passing. In an airport, because in fact, because they never met, there's been a play that has been put on for many years, the meeting, a play where Malcolm and Martin meet in a hotel room at the Teresa Hotel in Harlem. They talk about their families. They bring gifts for their children. Malcolm brings gifts for Martin's children, and Martin brings gifts for Malcolm's children. And they talk about the differences, and they fictionally have an arm wrestle or something like that, you know. But the bottom line is, this government, this system of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege must maintain itself so anybody who speaks against them will be eliminated. They will be permanently silenced. And for me, I don't give a damn. They can take this radio program off the air. I'm going to say what I'm going to say regardless. Yes, I'm thankful I'm able to throw this information out on the air on Time for an Awakening Media and any other form. Because if you see me, Brother Oshi, anywhere, I'm saying the same thing. I'm consistent. Because that's our problem. We lack that kind of seriousness and consistency that we need from our leadership. And that's what we need to change this thing, to turn this thing around. Malcolm was very clear. And we need him and we miss him. But the spirit will always be there. I'm going to play a little bit of some interviews that Malcolm had. And want you to join that conversation. And we're going to talk today in honor El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Omar Wally. We're going to honor him today as well. This is Malcolm. It's one of his interviews.
Who has created the slum and the ghetto that you're living in? Nothing but a debt.
And since the American white man has used his control over the press and over the textbooks and over all forms of media to make it appear that he has done us a favor by bringing us here and enslaving us, then the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has to rewrite history or retell history. And since the white man can't dispute this truth, he tries to defend himself by saying that Mr. Muhammad is teaching hate. It's not hate to say that we were kidnapped and brought here. It's true. It's not hate to say that we were Jim Crow, discriminated and segregated. It's true. It's not hate to say that the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in this country, came up with a hypocritical desegregation decision 9 years ago, which they haven't enforced yet. That's not hate. That's truth.
You're quoted as having said, when an airliner crashed with a number of white people on board, but you were glad it happened.
The white race in this country collectively are guilty of these crimes that our people are suffering from collectively, and therefore they would suffer some collective disaster, collective grief. And when that plane crashed in France with 130 white people on it, and we learned that 120 of them were from the state of Georgia, the state that my own grandfathers was a slave in, why, to me, it couldn't have been anything but an act of God, a blessing from God, and I frankly and sincerely pray for similar blessings from him to repeat themselves as often as he can spare.
But I take it then you support the freedom-loving attempts of the peaceful marchers in Alabama and these places.
You don't get freedom peacefully. Freedom is never safeguarded peacefully. Anyone who is depriving you of freedom isn't deserving of a peaceful approach by the ones who are being deprived of their freedom. And when black people in this country come out from under the mental straitjacket that the Negro clergymen have placed them in and begin to see that the only way you can get freedom is to get it the same way the white man in this country got it from England, or he says he got it from England. He was willing to pay the price for freedom. When you're willing to pay the price for freedom, then you get it. But the Negro in this country has never been willing to pay the price for his freedom. All of the price that we've been paying in the past has been freedom for the white man. We fought abroad so that the white man in America could be free today to sick police dogs on us, to beat our people in the heads with police clubs, and to turn water holes on little women and children and babies simply because they want to walk down the street like decent human beings. That's now the only way you can have peace, is to eliminate those injustices, and the American white man is not going to eliminate them. He's going to talk that pretty talk, but he'll still continue to practice those inhuman deeds.
You got the Honorable Elijah's message yourself behind prison walls.
When I was a Christian, I committed many crimes. And those crimes led to my own imprisonment. And also led to my being very atheistic, agnostic first and then atheistic. And it was only after hearing the religious teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that I became religious and was able to reform myself and rehabilitate myself. But I learned that after trying to reform and rehabilitate myself, that the American white man was more against me then than he was when I was a criminal, when I had criminal tendencies and was trying to carry out or practice his Christianity.
Do you blame Christianity for your crimes?
Christianity is one of the real causes of most of the condition that black people in this country are confronted with. It's the religious concept that Christianity has given Negroes in this country that makes us almost incapable of solving our own problems. The black man in this country has a different religious concept when he's a Christian than the white man has. If you notice, the black man is the only one who will turn the other cheek to his enemy, or who will love his enemy, or who will pray for those who despitefully use him just because he thinks that's what Jesus wants him to do. Now, the white man preaches the same thing, but he doesn't practice it.
Now, this refusal to integrate, surely it must lead to demands for your own state in America.
The black people in this country have been like a misfit wife married to the white man here who hasn't treated us right. And today, since we have given up all hope of him ever changing, we want a divorce. We want a complete separation, but we want a property settlement. And we think that the white man, we think that the American government should give us a property settlement, which means part of this country, which they robbed from the Indians with our help, and which they have worked up to make the kind of land that it is today.
Do you think this really practical? Don't you think that the future really lies with a peaceful transformation of the scene?
If American government, the Supreme Court, the President of the United States, the Congress and the Senate, and all these white liberals have said that they're for integration, and these Negroes haven't gotten any more integration than they have, well, that's more impractical than separation. Practical means that which you can practice. And if the Supreme Court and the Army and the Navy and the government and the President are supposed to be for integration and you still can't get it, why, good night. You can't get this, impossible. But we can get separation overnight because we already have it.
Mr. Malcolm, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. I thank you for letting the people over in Europe know what the white man in this country is doing to black people and the hypocrisy he's practicing when he accuses them over there of not getting their house in order. 20 million black people in this country have been just as thoroughly colonized by the American white man in a more shrewd, modern way than all of the colonized people in Angola, South Africa, or any other part of this world. But the white man over here hides his own dirt by constantly pointing toward Britain and France and Portugal and these other countries and accusing them of being colonial powers when he mastered colonialism before those countries.
The most disrespected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. We will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out.
Ashe, welcome back, brothers and sisters. The words of El Haj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, Brother Malcolm X. And truly that last piece, I definitely wanted to get that in because he was talking about that then, which is in the 60s, mid-60s. He died February 21st, 1965, at the age of 39. And he said that prior to that, and understand, look at today. Look at today. A lot of disrespect for our sisters. A lot of disrespect. 70% of the sisters who give birth without being married or the brother being there. A lot of disrespect for our sisters.
And of course, respect is a two-way street. There are some sisters that have no respect for black men, for American African men, because of the way they've been treated. There are many sisters who get degrees, and now they're trying to say, after they got their degrees, where are the men? They're not trying to say, they are saying, where are the men? It's not like they don't see them, but what they're saying is, where are the men? Where are the potential men for a mate? That's why the complementarity conference is important, because we need each other. Some of those sisters may not be in their mind to look at a brother who doesn't have a degree, or to look at a brother who's in a menial job as opposed to a big, serious, six-figure job or whatever. We need each other, regardless of the damn job. Come together for the union of family, because the stronger the family is, the stronger our community is. But see, this society has always been against American African family. Always. Because they know the strongest unit is the family. That's why we've never had good family life. Now, damn it, stop romanticizing about, oh, back in the day, the good old days. There ain't never been no damn good old days for us. When we were young, I can remember that seemed like a good old day, but I was a young man. I was a child. My parents were going through hell. Every generation, when you start to come up, you think about your time and you think about and you romanticize about it. No, it wasn't, because there was never and never have been and there never will be. But there are some of us who don't give a damn about the majority of us, because this society perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. So you could give less than a rat's ass about that 80% of us who are struggling, who are at or below the poverty line, who 2 to 3 paychecks away from being at or below the poverty line. But you happy. You got yours. That's why, just as they mentioned about the religion, and I said it many times in this program, Christianity particularly is a religion that is not conducive to liberation for African people. And I know there are some ministers out there who have churches that deal with liberation theology. And I understand that. But it is not conducive to liberation, self-determination, and sovereignty for African people. It's not. And, you know, if you want to still be, and also too, what he said, and I've made this quote a number of times. Malcolm said, when I come to the table to deal with the issues that are affecting African people, I'm not coming there espousing Islam. Because I know if I do that, because that's my religious philosophy, I know if I do that, there will be issues, because you're a Christian or you're a Jew or a black Hebrew Israelite or Seventh-day Adventist or whatever. So I'm leaving the religion out of the equation. I'm coming there as an African to deal with problems that are affecting African people. And I hope you come there to do the same, because that should be our focus, regardless of what our religious philosophies are. Because they don't treat us the way they treat us because we Christian or Muslim or black Hebrew Israelite or Omega Psi Phi or AKA or Delta Sigma Theta or Urban League or NAACP, or because I went to Morehouse, Spelman, FAMU, University of Georgia, University of whatever. No, they do what they do to us because we are African people, and they must do whatever they can to suppress us, to undermine us, to supplant us, to eliminate us, to eradicate us. Baba Baruti sent out
piece dealing with the darkest color all the way to white. And he was talking about, just like Malcolm said, I hate the rapist blood that flows in my veins. My father was a very light-skinned man. My mother's a dark-skinned woman. I looked the way I looked because of the union between those two. But I never met him. I seen have a picture of him. He is my father. But I love my mother. I love my dark-skinned mother. I love the African blood that flows in me, but I hate the rapist blood that flows in me. That's what Malcolm said. That's what I say. But look today. I've heard some people say the best thing that can happen is the union between white and black. Look at the commercials. Look at the commercials. Have you paid attention? Have you been seeing them? Do you see constantly Caucasian men or even women with darker skinned men or women or high yellow, if you want to use that term, or lighter skin or mulatto, whatever the hell you want to use. You see them in the hair. You know, one of the things that the European tried to do in many parts of the world was because once he came out of that dark age and went out and taking people's stuff and started going around and just taking their stuff, well, he had intimate relations, rape of the people they encountered, and seeing that the offspring did not look like them. Because why? Darker-skinned people, melanated people, genetics are dominant. Their genetics are dominant. European genetics are recessive. Because of the development that they went through, the human evolution that they went through, they're recessive. And so dominant, you get dominant. Dominant, recessive, you get dominant. So they didn't look like him, causing, as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing says, an innate fear of genetic annihilation. So they tried to make sure that they were in control. They're a minority population on the planet, but they dominate and they are in control. Because they will kill your ass. They've always found a better way to kill you. And now today, all kinds of methods to kill you. Drone strikes, poisoning, all kind of clandestines, or even open ways to do it. But I have no fear. There are many of us that we have no fear. Malcolm had no fear. That's why he is the model. He is the model of manhood. He stood up intelligently, very articulate, very making it plain. Not all these words. He was very articulate to the point that you understand clearly what he was coming from, what he was saying, what his intention is. Speaking to be understood, as I like to say. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, more discussion about the great El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, Malcolm X. You stay right here with us. We'll be right back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
was a time when the dark world, people with dark skin, would believe anything that they saw in the papers that originated in Europe. But today, no matter what is put in the paper, they stop and look at it two or three times and try and figure out what is the motive of the writer.
It's only change, only everything I know, even the things that seem still are still changing.
The powers that be uses the press to give the devil an angelic image and give the image of the devil to the one who's really angelic. They make oppression and exploitation and war actually look like an act of humanitarianism.
It's only change, only seems still changing.
Usually, with a person is looked upon as an extremist, anything that person does in your eyesight is extreme. On the other hand, if a person is looked upon as conservative, just about anything they do is conservative. Whenever any black man in America shows signs of an uncompromising attitude against the injustices that he experiences daily and shows no tendency whatsoever to deal or compromise with it, then the American press becomes as a radical and an extremist, somebody who's irresponsible, or as a rabble rouser, or someone who doesn't rationalize in dealing with the problem. Extremism in defense of liberty, extremism in quest of justice, is because I firmly believe in my heart that the day that the black man takes an uncompromising step and realizes that he's within his rights, when his own freedom is being jeopardized, to use any means necessary to bring about his freedom or put a halt to that injustice, I don't think he'll be by himself.
Changing, even things that seem. by any means necessary.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Like I said, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. But right after our program on Mondays and Wednesdays is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. On Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, right after Acres of Diamonds, is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Also from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then on Friday, if it's 8 p.m. and it's Eastern time, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then on Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening, once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah. Welcome back. Believe me, you just can't imagine how much I do appreciate all those who call in and all those who listen. You know, I really do. Going to give some quotes by Brother Malcolm. And some quotes from other people, what they've said and so forth. Really had a lot of deep admiration and respect and love for Brother Malcolm. One of my favorite quotes is, you know, about education. Education is our passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare today. And I know there's been some schools that had that quote, or people use that quote, and I'm hoping that they understand what he really meant by education being our passport to the future. For tomorrow belongs to those who prepare today. What he was saying is the right kind of education, liberating education. Because there's been people who seek education simply so they can get a job. There are people who graduated right now. No, I got to give props to the brother who, the billionaire investor, Brother Smith, who came to do the commencement speaks at Morehouse and told the graduating class, the 2019 graduating class, that I'm going to adopt you. It's all over the internet, of course, and it's been on national news. I'm going to adopt you. I'm going to erase your debt. You have no student loan debt. In fact, the biggest debt in this country, the biggest debt, more so than credit card debt, and other debt, because this is a debtor country. This country is in debt. This country is in debt big time to China. This country is in debt. It's a debtor country. It's student loan debt. And probably a good percentage of that student loan debt is those made-for-profit colleges that were started up about 15, 20 years ago to give you a degree and supposedly give you a job placement and so forth that never happened. Many of them closed, like Trump's school. They found ways to get you money so you could go to their school, and then after they've done that, you get nothing. Student debt. So we applaud that brother for doing that. And of course, his whole thing was, now you pay it forward. I did this for you. You go do something for someone else. But in reality, what happens is that people don't give a damn about someone else. They care about themselves. They care about me and mine, and the hell with you and yours. I got mine. And then not only that, they don't say, let's come together and do something. Very seldom does that happen. I remember Oprah, she just gave the brother in Newark, New Jersey, brother principal in Newark, New Jersey, $500,000
to continue the programs that he's doing, particularly for the evening programs out of his high school. The fact that they can bring people in to clean, to do some laundry and so forth, all these kind of positive things. So we got to give him a lot of props. And of course, you know, Oprah went ahead and did that, and that's good for her. She's done a number of things. But when you're a multi-billionaire, it's just like me. I thought about that. You know, I pay my bills. I don't have millions. I don't have tens of thousands. I get paid, and sometimes when I get my pension check and I pay my bills, and the first of the month bills as well as my mid-month bills, you know, I still have money to do some other things with. And I thought, it's a drop in a bucket for somebody who has millions. It surely is a drop in a bucket for somebody who has billions. So even though the brother did that, and it said it's going to come out to be between $40 to $50 million for the graduating class at Morehouse College, it's debt to be eliminated, and that's great. That's great. But the reality is those men and women of graduating classes from 2019 all the way back, their whole thing was to get a job. Only few, like I said, Oprah gave those brothers in New Jersey, in Camden, New Jersey, that made a pact with each other to be doctors and to come back to that community, to service that community. Very few pacts like that were men and women say, we're going to get these degrees and we're going to open up a business that are going to help service our community. Very few. Because the idea is that I got mine and I want to go work for some Caucasians and have a nice office and be able to have a nice car and live in a gated and subdivision and community. I want to, you know, that's my idea. That's progress. No, it ain't. Because you're trained in this country to have no empathy and no sympathy for brothers and sisters who don't have. In fact, your mindset is, what's wrong with them? That's their fault. I got mine. The mindset is that when you talk about African lives being killed, my good friend sent me a piece on the Klan. The Klan had killed so many people. What did it say? What did he send me? He said the Klan, you know, had killed so many people. Yeah, the Klan had killed 3,400, almost 3,500 people in a span of 86 years. The Klan had killed 3,500 people in a span of 86 years. But since 2016, American Africans killed 1,891 in Chicago alone, and 10,000 shootings nationwide. American Africans killed more Africans in 6 months than an entire 86 years of the Klan. But what do you understand about that? Or what is it that you don't understand about that? You've been trained to hate yourself. You've been trained to kill each other. I know that's why we rail against the police killing us. And some of us rail against us killing us. But because the norm has been, it is the norm to kill each other. It is the norm to wipe each other out. To kill each other for some property that is not ours. Nothing in this country is ours. There is no land, no area of land in this country that is ours, especially in a country that has what they like to do and force it upon people, eminent domain. Even the original inhabitants of this country, the indigenous people of this country, if they want to do something, they'll do it. It is not theirs. It's not the indigenous peoples. It's the Europeans, it's the Caucasians, and they will do whatever they feel they have to do to take that land. There are many quotes I have here about from Malcolm.
Maybe some of you have some of yours. If you want to do that, please give us a call and share them with us and share your feelings with us. We have a caller, 646-646-646.
Hey, what's happening, Oshie? What's going on, brother?
Hey, Jay, how you doing, man? You doing all right?
I'm doing great, man. I can't complain. It ain't gonna help none, brother. Hey, listen, number one, before I get into Malcolm, I want to say this about this brother, Robert Smith. All I could do is take my hat off to the brother, because what he did is something that may have vibrations and effect for a long period of time for those black men, if those black men do the right thing.
I say,
if they take advantage of this opportunity that was given to them and to work for the best interests of black people, it'll be the best thing to happen. Because they're not in a position now to have to go chase the dream with the daddy. They're more or less, and think about this, if they took care of their credit right, they could go out there and use these degrees that they have, collectively come together and build institutions to employ themselves and not be under the rule of that no good, filthy, stinking cracker. If their mind is right, and if they've been educated, and if they have a vision for independent, sovereign African future. But then again, a lot of them are going to go run to the daddy for the daddy's trinkets. But the reality is they now have a fresh start to do fresh things and have fresh ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I just take my hat off to the brother Robert Smith. You know, it's funny because your man Friday night, Elliot, I guess got a little upset with me or whatever, because I said I didn't have no problem with them no good, filthy, stinking crackers coming to protest the brothers at Clark and Morehouse. You understand?
No, what was this about?
What they're doing?
What was this
in
about?
In regard to the gay mafia agenda.
There was a protest at Morehouse.
Yeah, the white church, excuse me, went and made a protest because of, you know, them accepting the Freak Nation members and all that. And I guess Elliot felt as though black people should just be bent out of shape because of that issue, that we should be so upset because these white folks are gonna come there and, you know, make a mockery over a ceremony that was there to, I guess, give upliftment to, you know, the brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I was saying, man, I'll pay that nonsense no mind. But you see how the ancestors sometime work? What did they do? They allowed for that man to present something that absolutely changed the lives of those young men. And on top of that, from what I heard, the parents didn't even pay them crackers no mind. They went about their business. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So sometimes things happen
So the Caucasians were anti-homosexuals. And that church...
anti-homosexual.
Anti-homosexual. Right. Yeah. And so that particular church was going to condemn Morehouse.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other places.
And my whole thing was, I'm anti-homosexual too. But I ain't going to get into no nonsense over that. I'm not going to pay that no mind. And I feel they have a right. Yeah. If that's what they feel, to protest that, because of the simple fact is that that's immoral behavior that we really don't even need our children to be around.
Let me say this, because the reality is this. In African society, there have been some brothers and sisters who studied African
society. We are Africans. From ancient times, contemporary times, there is no homosexuality in African society. Homosexuality was imposed and introduced by Europeans into African society. Homosexuality was imposed on African people.
Check this out, Jay.
So, we had a firefighters conference in Atlanta. And on the campus of Morehouse, we had a conference. And at that very time, there was an edict by the president of Morehouse talking about a dress code. He wasn't talking about dudes hanging, you know, with their pants hanging off their ass, exposing their drawers. No, he was talking about homosexuals with high heels, purses and boas.
Stop right there, Ochi. Listen to this. Now, just listen to this. I don't know how many years ago that was.
About 15.
Okay, but now think about this, Ochi, when I always talk about the power and the transformation and the manner in which black people have capitulated to the gay mafia and its agenda. That position that he's taking, that took 15 years ago, is out the door right now in Morehouse because he has now allowed those Freak Nation and the other forms of degenerates to be able to be free. And on top of that, he's interjecting them into the culture of Morehouse. So you see the growth and the development and the twistedness of them degenerates because of what the Yoruba has been able to do to us?
Yeah.
So now something that was unaccepted 15 years ago is now accepted? Do you see how this thing works? Or do you get an idea of how this thing works?
Let me say this, Jay. In the African-centered movement, in the Pan-African movement, in the liberation movement, in the movement for sovereignty for African people, there is no homosexual agenda. There is no homosexual plank. If you are a homosexual, that's between you and your business, you and your friends. You don't bring it into the struggle for African liberation. There is no, like in the Black Lives Matter movement, they got the thing about LGBTQ, and that's part of that movement. No, that's not what we're talking about. We understand as African people, we need each other, African men and African women. It is the foundation of family. It is what makes us African. It is the way to our ancestors. It is a way to our ancestors. We don't see our lack of understanding of who this cracker is has always been a problem. But because they control the narrative, and a lot of times we don't look outside or look to ourselves, we believe what the cracker has told us because we've been going to his schools. We look at his TV. We listen to this. We read that. And we don't understand the impact that has had on African lives.
I agree with you so much. And you know something? I think the so-called brother who did the good deed, Robin Smith, he got him a wife woman.
He's married to a Caucasian. Is that a surprise? Of course not. That's not a surprise.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Not a surprise. Here it is, the big world do a good deed, and he got him a wife woman. Yeah. Oh, so that just makes it more of an agenda for the Negro to go out there and get him a Becky.
Yeah.
And what could be done. Now listen. He got a Becky, and I ain't got no love for no Negro that got a Becky.
See, let me say this.
I do appreciate what he did. And I think what he did was a good thing.
Right.
I just now hope that the brothers that were rewarded this opportunity go out there and do good things
Ashe.
For African people.
Ashe. Well, you see, like Malcolm. Malcolm said, like me, you never met me. And my father was a very light-skinned man. Very. You get, if you just looked at his picture, he could be mistaken. He might have even passed, but he was in entertainment, and he was a ventriloquist, and he had a black dummy, JoJo, Billy Williams and JoJo, and he was out of Chicago. I'm from Milwaukee. I was born in Milwaukee. My mother was born in Milwaukee in 1926. You know, my family left Georgia in the first wave migration at the turn of the last century. My grandfather, unlike his brothers who stopped in Chicago on that northern trek, he went to Milwaukee, damn it. So anyway, I was born here in Milwaukee, you know, but I love my mother. I love my dark-skinned mother, you know. And I'm like Malcolm. I hate the racist blood that flows through my veins. I looked at a piece because I understand what Caucasians have been trying to do. They've been trying to birth us out. They've been trying to see, just like Smith, who's married to that Caucasian, his children, he'll probably encourage them to marry Caucasians, and they'll marry Caucasians. Then what happens to that melanated skin? Exactly. Exactly. That's why, you know what? I hate the British. You know that. I don't know if you knew that, but now you knew. Now you do. Now you know. And I hate the damn royals. I hate the constantly on the American news talk about those so-called royal, they don't know about that, but they're always talking about Markle and shit. And I'm hoping that child reaches back into that DNA and gets some her grandmother on her mother's side. Get some of that DNA. So when that child has a child progress, it starts to look more African. I hope that would be the case. The skin gets darker, you know, the hair is more frizzy. She got a nose, a wide nose, got some thick lips, that when you look at that child, it's unmistakably African. I hope that would be the case. I doubt it, but I hope, you know. But anyway, let's get back to Malcolm.
But let me just leave you with this,
okay,
Brother Oshie. You know what you said about your daddy? I felt the same way about my daddy. I thought that he was white, and I didn't even want him to come to school for me, bro. Thought that I want to hold his hand in the street or anything.
Yeah.
That's how deep it is when you got an African continent. But in regards to Malcolm, think about this. The greatest thing about Malcolm is to me has always been his ability to educate himself in the worst possible condition that a black man could be in.
Right.
But you got to remember, prison in the time that when Malcolm was in prison was probably the most brutalist place in the world. The type of behavior in the prisons at that time was absolutely horrendous, from the way the inmates treated one another to the way the guards treated them, the conditions and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm mm-hmm. saying? And for him to be able to evolve into probably one of the greatest intellectual thinkers that we have ever produced is utter amazing.
It is phenomenal. You got to think about it.
Very few have been able to do that.
Right. And see, there was something innately in him, because he was a bright child, you know. In fact, when he was in Michigan, he was in the top of his class, all Caucasians. On that day of career day, when he said, I want to be an attorney, and the teacher told him, and I just laughed at him, no, you can't be an attorney. Number one, my people wouldn't hire you. And in fact, your people wouldn't hire you. You know, so you can go work with your hands and so forth. He got turned off from school, but he was even class president. I don't know if they voted for him out of you know, just like they did in the movie Putney Swope, when they didn't think he was going to be elected, you know, yeah, I'm going to vote for them. I'm vote for Malcolm. Ain't nobody going to vote for Malcolm. So, wasted their vote. Yeah, but no, he was elect class president only because he was that intelligent of a brother. Even though he did all the things that he did to put him in that situation, all the gangster stuff that he did, he remembered numbers and so forth, all that gangster stuff that he did. But when he got into prison, he was transformed into a man of respect and nobility. He studied the dictionary to increase his vocabulary when, you know, through a crack of light in his cell, when they have like a light on and you can get a little bit of that light because light's out in the cell. Here he was studying the dictionary, you know. In fact, when he got out, in fact, that's what I'm saying. He said, my alma mater was books. That's my alma mater is books. A good library like the Schomburg. I spent the rest of my life reading, just satisfying my curiosity. He was a seriously learned man. But sometimes when you are such a learned man and you get the perspective of the European, of the Caucasian, of the Urugu, of the cracker, then that's your frame of reference. He didn't get that. It was varied. It was a wide range. Even after he left the Nation of Islam, it expanded his knowledge about life and other people and other cultures even more so. In fact, he said, I'm willing to work with anybody who wants to deal with these adverse conditions that affect humanity. I'm willing to work with anybody, you know? So,
well,
you know,
I mean, Malcolm was an inspiration to a lot of people. Malcolm had a vision that very few have had. The thing is this, he told you what the cracker was, what the cracker was about, and unfortunately, we wasn't in a position to protect them, and we got caught up in what the cracker do.
Yeah.
The manipulation.
Right.
The slander. All of the things necessary to create a climate that he wasn't here to fulfill, you know, his
right.
mission.
Right.
Him and King and others.
Yep.
The thing is, whenever you stand up to the cracker, you just gonna be in a position to where maybe you won't be here
right.
to enjoy
right.
the fruits of whatever it is.
Exactly.
But what you have to do is you have to understand that.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to know that that's what you face.
Yeah.
But you still have to educate the people. You still have to do the things that the brother did. That's why, you know, I just love what he represented. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's a mandatory reading for every black child.
Yes.
To have an understanding. It's a shame when somebody reads the book and isn't able to grasp the realization and the reality
right.
of what it is, because there's so many messages being put out here to counteract the truth
mm-hmm.
of a brother like a Malcolm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the
yeah.
good thing is, Malcolm was like Ozzy Davis said, our shining prince.
That's
he
right.
was
he was our
manhood.
He was our manhood.
He was everything that we should be and want to be.
That's
imagine
right.
if we was in the position to where as we had 10 Malcolms in every state, in every black community, what we would hopefully be able to do. But you know something? The reality is this, Oshie, and the truth is, we're never going to find sovereignty and liberation here with this cracker.
No!
It's something that we can't permit. And
right.
this is why you see the manipulation. This is why you see his attack on women. This is why you see his placing us in a position to where as we're always being used and manipulated by him. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we never find ourselves in a position to move forward and to liberate ourselves from this devil because it's a constant manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the bottom line is all you can do is just educate those that are surrounding you right. and that have like-mindedness and try to That's move what you do. Forward and leave something to those who come behind me. It's like, I know you try to educate your grandkids. You know what I mean? I mean, you have children, but you know, you already know in a lot of ways they set their ways and they going to listen to something. They going to listen to something's not. But your grandchildren, you have the influence of educating them. You know, the children around you have the influence of dropping certain seeds. And you know, what you have to do is when you drop the seeds, you have to show how to grow with the seed.
Right.
And that's one of the mistakes that we don't do. But Malcolm is the greatest brother.
He is, no doubt.
Man, Malcolm,
let me
Malcolm
take this other.
Our
that's right. Let me take this other call, Jay. Just hang on. Let me take this other call. 267-267
Brother Oshi, greetings.
Ah, Sister Sasami. Sister Sasami. How are you, Sister Sasami?
Yes. Doing wonderful. Doing
great.
Fantastic. Blacktastic.
Thank
Blacktastic.
You. All right.
My brother, doing well. I missed a little bit of the beginning. I think maybe about a half of.
Okay.
Half hour of the beginning. So hopefully I won't be repeating something you already discussed.
But if it is, it's okay. If it is, it's okay. Believe me. Go ahead, dear.
Okay, wonderful. You know, I wanted to just quote my favorite quote from Malcolm X is the one regarding education, and it's something like this. It might be paraphrasing it. Only a slave or a fool. I've seen it written as a fool too.
Yes.
Allows the enemy to educate their children.
That's right.
So that's my favorite. And then I'm also just remembering when I first. You know, some really great things happened before and right after I got to the U.S. And this is, end of 1979. The school I went to, believe it or not, was in Iowa when I first got to the U.S. I wasn't in Kentucky where I ended up. And this school had made the autobiography of Malcolm X was a required reading for one of the classes. Or maybe all, I can't remember. I think everybody may have had to take it under general requirements. Luther College is where I started off. So I got to read the autobiography of Malcolm X, and that was soon after I had been listening to the cassette recordings of my favorite teacher, along with Malcolm X, Dr. Khalid Abdul-Mohammed.
Okay.
And I got to listen to him before I left Botswana. You know, he was touring South Africa, and somebody gave me the audio cassettes that I just couldn't stop listening to. So I got to the U.S. and then had to read. This was one of the books I had to read. So this was just a beautiful thing for me to really solidify, you know, what I would have never been exposed to.
Right.
As an African coming from, having been born on the continent. And what I liked about that book was, he was always open to learning, despite what happened to him as a youth. When he started reading and studying, every time he found out truth, new truth, he changed his life accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I kind of just wonder how often do we read something and say, you know what, this is the truth. I'm changing my life right now. This is how I'm going to live my life. So. You know, I thought that was just a beautiful way to really learn, you know, so that way when you read, you're actually also mm-hmm. learning. So that was a little bit I wanted to say about him. But the other subject was, and I'm not familiar with, you know, this situation where Oprah offered some money for some brothers to do some work in the community in was it New Jersey?
Yes, Newark, New Jersey.
I think
the principal
New
of,
Jersey.
Right, the principal of Newark, New Jersey. The high school he
Yes,
was at.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to that, but you know, when I first heard Oprah was the one who had given money, and then I just felt like, okay, Oprah for me raises my eyebrow. You know, I just have never been, you know, actually I take that back. When I first, you know, when I was much younger, I used to watch her shows. You know, I thought she was doing well until I realized what she really represented as an mm-hmm. you know, looking at her
okay.
from an African point
sure.
of view.
Yes.
So when I heard that, I thought, okay, but then it turned out one of these brothers, is it one of these brothers who's married to a European, a white person?
I don't know if the brother, I don't know if the brother, the principal of that high school in Newark, New Jersey, is married to a Caucasian. I'm not sure. But what he was referencing.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe that's who you and Brother Jay were talking about.
No, Jay was talking
maybe
about
somebody else.
Jay was talking about the brother who is a billionaire, who is the commencement speaker at Morehouse College here in Atlanta. And,
oh, he's the one who's married to?
Right, a Caucasian. But he did is he relieved the debt of the total graduating class, the 2019 graduating class at Morehouse, which is going to be anywhere between $40 to $50 million.
That's what
he did with the whole idea for the brothers to pay it forward. So when those graduating class at Morehouse, those brothers to do something and give back and help others. That was his whole point.
Okay. You know, I don't, Brother Oshi, maybe I just don't trust white people at all. I mean, to me, these are devils. I think the white man is the devil. You know, I know he has trained too many of us to do his dirty work.
Well, let me say it to you this way, Sister Sasami.
Right.
Caucasians in general, there are some individual Caucasians that maybe in your life have been some cool people. I have. In fact, the Caucasian I work with coaching football, you know, even though my colors on my football team were red, black, and green, we were the Panthers, you know, but he was a decent dude. He's even conservative, to be honest. But in terms of working together, me and him, we did that. We impacted a lot of good young men. We helped a lot of good young men, you know, some not. But so I ain't talking about individual Caucasians. I'm talking about the Caucasian collective. You know, that's the issue. And even those individual Caucasians who sometimes act paternalistic and act all in a way because this system is theirs. It is theirs. It's not ours. And it benefits them. Caucasians generally will tell you they don't want redistribution of wealth. They don't want all that 1% of those millionaires to give back to put money back in so other people can have equality and jobs and stuff. No. The mindset of Caucasians is individualistic, materialistic, it's greedy, and it's violent. The society that Caucasians grew up in, the society that Caucasians evolved in, is violent. It's violent from its very nature. They mark historical points by war, by violence. There are people, and if they're violent towards other humans, they're violent towards women. European culture is rape culture. And I don't give a damn what anybody else has to say about it. And I stand on it. It's rape culture. It's a violent culture. They may act humane. They may say this, that, and the other. But everything within that system speaks to it. So I agree with you,
right.
Sister Sasami. I don't trust Caucasians either. Go ahead.
Right. And I hear everything you're saying. I understand that there's some individual, you know, white folks who may do good things. But I think in every one of them, there's the devil in there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them just have more of the devil than others. And I think that's how they manage to, you know, to come and invade us and rape homes and kidnap some of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it's because they were using that individual who comes in who looks like they're doing some good.
Right.
So I think until we start doing for our own selves, and not have to rely on not just the, you know, the beast or the devil, you know, to be doing certain what looks like good things for us. And they use our people. Because to me, this is how I look at it. Anybody who's married to an enemy, and Baba Barudi said it beautifully. I mean, he said it so well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who sleeps with our enemy is our enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if they start doing things like, you know, giving out money, they're just trying to pacify us.
Mm-hmm.
Because now those young people graduating are looking at this man and say, okay, he's married to a Caucasian. This is what he's doing. So that means, you know, he's right. Now the role model.
Right. Because
you know, which is why I'm not a big fan of even, you know, edifying certain, you know, African leaders in the past mm-hmm. who were married to white people. Franz Fanon, Kwame Nkrumah.
Right.
You know, and I know.
Emma Carl Cabral. These are great men.
With all due respect.
Right.
But I think, you know, when you look at youth, I mean, young people see what we do more than what we say. So this is how I feel about these people who are marrying enemies, mm-hmm. is that I don't care how much good they're doing. That's between them and their ancestors and whoever. I'm not going to be talking to, if I had to be the one making decisions about educating, re-educating our children, those are not the people I'm going to be highlighting. They're not the ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because children are going to see, all they're going to see is, okay, this person is married to somebody white, therefore this is the thing to do. And that's not the message we want to send to our young people, right?
No, what we want to send to our young people is that we need each other. Young men that are African right. and young women that are African, y'all need to come together. And,
right.
and embrace one another and work with one another to build strong families, to build strong communities, to support one another. That's what they need to learn. That's what they need to know. That's what's important. We need each
right,
other.
Right.
You know, that's what Baba
right.
Baruti's,
and they have to see us acting
yeah.
it. I mean,
right.
it has to be more than just us saying it.
Right.
You know, which means, you know, those that they should be modeling are going to be people who, you know, it's a black man married to a black woman with black children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and I understand that we've got a lot that has happened historically, even here in Botswana. I mean, you probably get more interracial marriages here in Botswana more than, I wouldn't be some, other than South Africa, probably more than any other
mm-hmm.
African country.
Well,
it's horrible.
In South Africa, They were encouraging African women to be with Caucasian men, and then the offspring.
But not vice versa.
Yeah, AJ.
But not vice versa, though.
What's that?
Go ahead.
Oh no, in the continent, yeah, brother Jane. The continent is totally unlike in the U.S., where it's the man who's marrying the white woman.
Right, but that's why I was saying they wasn't encouraging white women to be with African men. But they definitely was encouraging African women to be with white men. That's a whole totally dynamic. You know, that's why was what you were so great that you said earlier in regards to Robin Smith still being an enemy to African people, even though he's done a good deed. Everybody does a good deed. There's nothing wrong with accepting the good deed, but you have to be able to put it in context. Because think about it. He's evolving whiteness more than he is Africanness, because when he dead and gone, that's going to go to white people. The same thing with OJ.
Same with OJ, Michael Jackson.
Black man gives his riches to white women. That's what you see happening with these athletes.
That goes exactly. And I'll tell you what's tragic about Botswana, because I know some women who are nurses in, you know, Australia, the UK, all over the place, local African women. Guess what they have done? Some of them have brought back some Eastern European men that they married, wherever they were, brought them here, you know, got huge pieces of land, and you know where that land is going to go to. To those
mm-hmm.
white men.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's why
interracial marriage is just, we just have to really say, because that's homosexuality, that's how it comes in. Here in Botswana, everybody knows the women who marry these people, if something happens to the marriage, all of a sudden they're lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember the first time I ever heard of homosexuality was through mulattoes who were here in the country, who were talking about it, or maybe people say they were acting a little bit strange. If it was not mulattoes, it was white people. You know, so there is nothing good about integrating with the, and I know, you know, both of you, you know, agree with that, but I just felt like, you know, I think sometimes they really, you know, they it's almost like they put a whole veil in front of our eyes, and before we know it, you know, things, our dynamics have changed because we saw what looked like the good action that they were doing, but they were really what they were presenting. Because, you know, because even Oprah, I'm thinking, you know, I mean, the school she built in South Africa, that's all she was doing. They were teaching those children to be lesbians. Well, and that was way before that was South Africa even made it legal.
Oh, it's legal to be homosexual. It's legal to be homosexual in South Africa?
No.
They're the only and first African country that legalized marriage. Brother Oshie, it's not just legal.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about legalizing marriage.
I didn't know that.
It's the only... Oh, yeah. And I still remember people talking about, because now, that's where the Europeans came. Before they even engaged in the transatlantic, you know, capturing and enslavement of our people, 1510, around then, is when the Portuguese came through Cape Town, which is why... Now, in Cape Town, you can barely see a black person because of miscegenation. And that's also the capital of homosexuality in Africa. Apparently, it's even worse than San Francisco and Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. Right here on the continent, where the majority of people are totally against it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I talk to people here in the village, people are against it. But what they'll say on the radio, they'll say, well, more and more people, you know, Africans or Botswana are accepting homosexuality, something like, you know, because this is what they do. They come in and decide to define who we are. They've always done that. And then they'll start imposing their ways on us.
Mm.
So they start telling everybody that, you know, a lot of people are now open to this.
Yeah, it's deep.
And then nobody talks about the rape of young,
yeah,
young, you know, the pedophilia.
And see, once again, Sister Sami, homosexuality is not indigenous to African culture. It was brought into Africa by Europeans. It was brought into Africa by the Greeks, the later the Romans, and then it was expanded through colonialism. Mm-hmm. When we were stolen from Africa on some of those so-called plantations, when they talked about buck breaking, what they meant was a homosexual would tie down a strong brother, bring everybody out to humiliate him.
That's beyond humiliation.
Yes. Yes. Let me.
In front of the family.
Yes. So anyway, let me read this. Let me read this to you. I just got this text. It's very heartwarming. And just let me read this. Hello, Brother Oshie. I'm Laurel Noble. I met you years ago back in the fifth grade in Mr. Kane's class at Kluge Elementary. I forgot the things you taught us about ancient Egypt for years until about 2 years ago while watching films about ancient Egypt. I was fascinated with the African culture, and I recently discovered that I'm a sixth-generation Rwandan. I'm in the process of self-educating myself on Pan-Africanism. I live in Iowa now, and I'm currently serving my last year in the Army, and I'm finishing my last two semesters of college. I would love to meet you sometime to receive some of the wisdom that you gave us. Wow. See?
Beautiful.
That's why you do it. That's why you remain consistent and constant and be a man or woman of your word, because you never know who you're touching. You never know who's listening. That's why I love Malcolm. He was our model of manhood. He was uncompromising. He wasn't a sellout. He was the kind of man we all should aspire to be. I'm not saying to look at me like that, no. But I'm saying they are great men. And all I try to do is to make us love us. Sister Susama, you said something about truth. Here's a good quote. Truth comes, and believe me, I try my damnedest, because I'll tell you right now, and y'all know, this is not my opinion. I don't give my opinion because my opinion is profane. What I give is the knowledge of our ancestors and scholars. But, oh, I got to go off because I got to get Brother Franklin Jones on. So, yeah, I got
to
go.
Look forward to your wisdom, brother.
All right. All right. Hotel family. Peace.
All right. Thank you so much. Hotel, brother.
Hotel.
Oshie. Brother
Thank you. The most potent weapon. We in this program, like we in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and don't want to pay for. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Santi Salami, thank you. Abibi Fahodio, we are a victorious destiny. Peace, family.